regarding his new tell-all book. President Trump tweeted that Comey was a leaker and liar, and virtually everyone in Washington thought he should be fired for the terrible job he was doing and that he leaked classified information for which he should be prosecuted. This is USA Radio News.
This is Michael David from Seattle. I'm 51 years old, and 6 months ago, I started taking Andro 400 to increase my testosterone. Since then, I've lost 35 pounds of fat, and my waist went from size 38 to size 32. I have more energy, and I look and feel 20 years younger. And now, my wife tells me I have to take Andro 400.
Hi, this is Ron Johnson from Utah. After 10 weeks of taking Andro 400, I lost 13 pounds, and my waist went from 36 to 33. That was 8 years ago. I continue to take Andro 400, and I've maintained my weight at 172. Gained muscle and energy. I'm 63 now and feel better than I have in 30 years.
Andro 400, the natural way to increase testosterone, lose belly fat, gain energy, and feel great. Try Andro 400, the safe, effective, affordable way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com or call 888-400-0435. 888-400-0435.
The president's second-in-command will fill in for him at a foreign summit. The president's second-in-command will fill in for him at a foreign summit. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports.
It would have been President Trump's first trip to South America since winning the presidency, but then the Syria issue cropped up, so he canceled his plan to go, and instead Vice President Mike Pence will represent the United States at the Summit of the Americas being held in Lima, Peru. It comes as many Latin American and Caribbean nation leaders are rather upset with the United States because of some of the Trump administration's policies, including ordering National Guard troops to the Mexican border, and also the president's wanting to erect a wall along the border, and his threats to unilaterally rewrite NAFTA. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Emerging technologies are enabling law enforcement to detect cell phone use while driving and are giving cities and states the options of ticketing drivers automatically, as speed cams already let them do for speeding. This is USA Radio News.
There's a price war in the insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call the Term Lifeline right now and see if you can save 40%. $500,000 plans and up, that's our specialty. Even great smokers' rates. Protect your family today. Call the Term Lifeline right now for a free quote. 866-509-TERM. 866-509-TERM. 866-509-TERM.
Before we get to the 2018 midterm election, we do still have some primaries. One of the more notable primaries is taking place in...
Well, good afternoon, Hunterdon, and what a beautiful day it is. Sorry I'm a little late. Traffic was, I think everybody decided to take off early. Traffic was not fun coming from the Round Valley area. So, what's happening? Woo, I just put on the weather, and for some reason, they're talking about hazardous weather conditions. Well, maybe people consider it hazardous because we finally have some nice weather. So, let's see what they're talking about. Today, they said it was fair, 82 degrees. Frankly, it was a beautiful sunny day. I think it was even higher than 82. And if you didn't get out to enjoy it, too bad. Because you really missed a beautiful day. So tonight should be mostly clear. Tomorrow, mostly sunny. The weather is predicted to be about a high of 75 degrees, but I've heard it could go up to as high as 80. Unfortunately, Sunday, we can't expect the same weather. By Saturday night, there's about a 50% chance of showers. Still above freezing, which is good. I have a guest today, Bobby Paola, who is one of the things he does is landscaping. So I think I'm going to go off a little bit today, and so he can tell us when we should start planting. But in any event, Sunday we have about a 70% chance of showers, and then into Sunday night about an 80%, Monday 90%, and by Monday night about 40%. So this is not going to be a good day for Bob Paola or other guys who have to work outside. And guess what, Bob? Are you going to work this weekend now that we have some beautiful weather tomorrow?
No.
I'm really putting him on the spot. He decided to come in and just kind of listen. I was planning on talking about Social Security, because it's always an issue, and it's always an issue for people who decide to retire before their first, or I should say their retirement date. We can take early retirement as of age 62, but the question is, should you do it? And there's a real issue with respect to the right time to take Social Security. One of the things you really should do is talk to a financial advisor. Hopefully, if you don't have a financial advisor to plan for retirement, everybody really needs to have this information, because it's so easy to kind of do it wrong. So, for example, I know a lot of people who have decided or did take Social Security benefits as soon as they qualified, which, as I said, is age 62. However, this really is not the best choice for many people. So filing for benefits at age 62, of course, offers immediate money, monthly payments. However, if you're not retired, that's not exactly true, because there's some payback. But let's assume that you're retired at 62, and the issue is whether or not you should take Social Security or wait until either your full retirement age or even age 70. So, in fact, every year you wait, and most people don't realize this, if you wait to start collecting, you increase your starting payment by 7 to 8%. Well, it's 78%, up to the age of 70. So, of course, there's no reason, if you're age 70, not to collect. But if you wait until age 70 to begin receiving payments, your benefit will be almost twice as much as it would be if you start at age 62, which, when you think about it, is pretty amazing. Now, what are some of the reasons to start early? Well, of course, if you have serious health problems, and the other reason, if you desperately need the money. So what's full retirement age? Now, full retirement age, you can get your full benefit, and, of course, at age 65, you can get Medicare, unless that changes in the future. But if you were born in 1937 or earlier, you can get Social Security at age 65. Between 1930 and 1942, it goes up, and it goes up monthly, but it's 65 plus some months. If you were born between 1943 and 1954, your age is 66, and then between 1955 and 1959, it's age 66 plus a certain number of months, depending on where you fall in that time period. And of course, after 1960 or later, your full retirement age is 67 years old. So that means that if you take Social Security before age 67, if you were born after 1960, you will get that much of a decrease for the rest of your life. So is this somewhat of a gamble? Of course it is. However, I think we all need to take a look at when we're going to need money. And I think that for most people, their expenses really don't go down that much when they retire. And certainly the expenses may go up if you live to your 80s or 90s. And at that point, you know, medication costs could go up, assisted living if you need assisted living, and certainly let's not even talk about the cost of nursing care. I have a friend of mine just had to put his mother into nursing care. Bob, what do you think he was going to have to pay per month for nursing care? I mean, I know it's a big range, but I was shocked.
What type of nursing care?
This was a good nursing home, very good in the Boston area, and it was going to run about $15,000 a month. Now, of course, at some point, if you spend down all your assets, you will be entitled to, then you'll be entitled to go on Medicaid. But most people don't want to do that. So what happens, and should you receive benefits as early as possible? And the fact is, you need to check and see what the impact of the timing of your benefits are. And there's some different decisions and different lifetime incomes from Social Security depending on those decisions. So let's assume that we have a
married couple, Jim and Jane, and if they choose to receive benefits as early as age 62 when they become eligible, what's going to happen? Well, let's make the assumption that Jim's annual benefit at age 62 is $12,804. And Jane's annual benefit at age 62 is $19,404. So, now this includes the benefit for both Paul and Jane from the age 62 to 83, plus Jane's benefits until her death at age 95. Because what will happen if Jim predeceases her, is she will get the survivor benefit, which in her case would be the same. Now, what happens if they continue working through their 60s and don't need Social Security benefits right away? So if Jim and Jane each file for benefits at age 70, they will ensure that they will both receive the highest possible annual benefit. And at that point, under the same scenario, instead of receiving at age 62, $12,804, Jim would receive $24,444 a year. Now, that's making the assumption right now. We're not talking about COLA. We're not talking about increases or decreases. And Jane's annual amount at age 70 would be $35,952. So instead of $19,404 a year, she's going to be receiving $35,952. Now, obviously, if one of them dies, the Social Security stops. What we could also do, or what parties can also do, is collect some of the Social Security now with the larger survivor benefit later. So, for example, if Jim's annual benefit collecting at age 62 is, as I said, $12,804, and Jane does not take her amount, and she waits till age 70, then she would be getting $35,952 a year. So what we're really interested in is the cumulative lifetime benefit. If the first scenario, Jane, her death is at age 95. So if they both take the early retirement, then you're talking about less than $1 million. If they maximize to age, in other words, they don't take it until age 70, they would be receiving, under this scenario, almost $1,217. Now, it's reduced if one collects early and the other waits till 70. Then it's still $1,168,000 rounded. So that this certainly looks to show people, or should show people, that they really need to consider all of, all of the facts before they decide whether or not they should collect Social Security now or at age either 65, 66, or even 67 when they reach full-time retirement. Now, there used to be a program, and I'm not even going to talk about it because it really made a lot of sense for someone to defer their Social Security and collect from their spouse. That's no longer available. But it is important. As I said, I wouldn't necessarily call Social Security because I don't think they honestly sometimes are perhaps as good as they should be at giving advice. It really is important. The other thing that's important to know, and of course as a matrimonial lawyer, most of you know that I do family law, and the only thing I would have to say about one party collecting at age 62 and the other party waiting is this creates a real problem. I've had cases, in fact, fairly recently I had a case where the wife decided to start collecting at 62, and the husband did not collect. Well, unlike other pensions, Social Security is not divisible upon divorce in New Jersey. So in my case, I had to give my client the not happy advice that she was going to continue to get a much lower benefit than her husband would receive because she started taking Social Security at age 62. So just back to say a little bit more about this. You know, one thing isn't right for everyone. I mean, obviously, we all know people who die in their late 50s or their early 60s, and there is a period of years that they can calculate how long it will take you to make that up. But the question is whether or not you're a gambler. My sense is that most people really need to be able to protect their Social Security in the future, and so that they're most concerned about payments when they're older and really may need it. The other thing that's very interesting is, remember, at age 70 and a half, you have to start taking out payments from your pension and your 401k and your IRA. Now, these are the amount you have to take out every year depends on your age. What they don't tell you is you can, in fact, run out of those benefits. I had an aunt who lived to age 102, and I don't remember exactly when she ran out, but as I recall, it was sometime in her late 90s. She had used up all of her pension, and in her case, it was IRA money. She did not need that money early on and ended up paying taxes, because you do pay taxes on distributions from an IRA. So when she could have best used the money, it was no longer there. So again, these are things to take into consideration when you're deciding whether or not to take Social Security at age 62 or at your full retirement, or perhaps even wait till age 70. So any questions, Bobby, other than the fact that you're never going to retire?
Makes a fantastic living also. And I have a friend of mine, saying that he's 69, so he's going to retire when he's 70. But he said he can keep on working, but he decided not to because he wants to start collecting Social Security right away.
But remember, after your full retirement age, you can collect Social Security, and it's not decreased by income. That was a great question, because a lot of people think that if they start taking Social Security, they can no longer have any earnings. That's not true. As long as you work until your full retirement age, you are entitled to take your full Social Security and continue working. So it's a win-win situation. The person who's working and continuing to work and doesn't need Social Security, however, there's no reason not to take it at age 70. Yes, you'll have to pay taxes on it, but still, at that point, you're not going to have any benefit to delaying beyond 70. But it is very important that people understand that, in fact, they can take Social Security at full retirement age or at age 70 and continue earning. So it's not just unearned income, it's earned income. Now, of course, you know, a portion of your Social Security is taxed, but still, it's a win-win if someone can wait as long as possible to take Social Security if they're continuing to work. And the only problem with not being able to earn as much as you want to earn is if you take early Social Security. Then there are some regulations about that. But your friend, uncle, brother could be earning $150,000 at age 70 and still collect his Social Security. And in fact, at age 70, absolutely should. And in his case, there doesn't seem to be any reason for him to take Social Security before age 70, other than if he had some kind of terminal illness. Then he might as well take it, you know, as soon as possible. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes. I just want to bring you up to date on some of our sponsors and what they have to say. Well, I don't even see my sheet here of who our sponsors are. Maybe I'll have to make it up.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hutton Chamber Radio, entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms. When they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Okay, we're back again, and my friend Bobby Paoella is sitting in. And one of the things that he brought up, and I think that's something important to think about, if you're looking to take early retirement, be very careful, because you have to be careful about your medical benefits. Remember, Medicare does not kick in until age 65, and so if you decide to take that retirement at 62, unless for some reason your pension includes payment of medical, you have to really be careful, because the cost of medical today is just, would we call it outrageous, Bobby? And for people who have their own business, I mean, they realize how expensive it is, and you know, it looks like it's only going to get more expensive, not less so. Are you hearing anything, Bob? Because you do have your own business.
Do you want me to share my numbers?
Well, yeah, if you're willing to do that.
I turned 60 in December, so I went into the next tier. So my medical coverage was going to go from $718 a month to $940 a month. And that was with, last year was a $1,500 deductible in-network and $2,500 deductible out-of-network. Well, my insurance agent, Carol Johnson, got me into a group plan because I had an employee that worked for me that was in the Affordable Care Act and was a qualifying exemption. So I still could have a group of two. So I was able to get into a group plan and drop my insurance to $540 a month from $940 a month. Of course, a higher deductible, but not that much higher. It was $5,000 deductible.
You know, and not that we tout certain people to talk to, but both Bobby and I know Carol Johnson, and I have to say, with my clients who are going to have to get medical insurance, I always suggest that they talk to Carol, because if anyone can come up with something, I find that she can. And one of the things, of course, about group plans is it has to be a group, and of course, very often in situations I'm involved in, it may be a group of two, but the group of two or family it involves the husband and wife. Once they're getting divorced, of course, that's not going to happen. I've only had one client who has been told that he can continue to cover his wife under his group plan. Frankly, I think the insurance agent is wrong, but he has it in writing, and of course, the savings is tremendous. So what Bobby just said is if you can get in a group, and apparently even though your employee has coverage under the Affordable Care Act, did that mean that he had to give up that coverage and come into the group?
No, he's a qualifying exemption.
Okay, so that's really important. In fact, you know, I haven't had to look into that, and I didn't even realize that. So because it's cheaper for him to have the insurance under the Affordable Care Act, that means that because the group, you're saving $400 a month.
Right, and that if I had to use my whole deductible, there's my deductible right there.
I'm not sure. What no? What mic is that?
I don't know. Is there a number on it?
Yeah, there should be. I think I had you on three and you're on four.
Oh.
All right, let's go back and do that.
Four.
Yep, unfortunately. He pulled the mic over from the other side, and I thought it was three. But let's go back and repeat that, because I'm not sure that anybody could pick up what you were saying. And we were talking about medical insurance and the fact that you have to be very careful if you retire before age 65, because you're not going to be eligible for Medicare. And, in fact, if you're married, and even though you're 65, remember, if your spouse is not 65, he or she will not be able to be covered under Medicare until they reach the age of 65. This is another dilemma, because if your spouse is significantly younger and is not working where she's covered or he's covered under medical insurance, that may be a monthly expense that you haven't thought about. But Bobby is sharing his situation, and I'm sorry, I didn't realize that I had the wrong mic on. So, tell us again. You okay. Had...
Last year, I turned 60 in December. My insurance up to last year was $718. I had a $1,500 deductible in-network and a $2,500 deductible out-of-network. So this year, Carol Johnson changed, was able to get me into a group plan, because the full-time employee that I have was in the Affordable Care Act, and he qualified as an exemption from my plan. So I don't have to include him in my plan. He has his own insurance, but it had allowed me to be able to get into a group plan in the state. So a benefit to me was my insurance going from $940 a month to $540 a month, but my deductible did go up to $5,000. But just that $400 a month savings would be my deductible if I had to use my insurance.
Right.
So if I had a surgery or a prolonged medical issue.
Well, in fact, I remember some years ago I had a young employee, and I had set coverage through my husband, but I can remember that what it was going to cost in insurance if I got a lower deductible, you know, I might as well get a higher deductible, which I did, and then I told him that I would pay anything up to that because it was actually less expensive to get a policy with a much higher deductible, and I could have easily paid that if it ever happened. So you're right, and it's very important to look into this, and especially the other thing is if people are leaving employment, you have the right. There are two things, and people get this mixed up. If you leave a large employer, you've been covered under insurance, you have the right, if you're fired or leave, as long as you don't have comparable insurance, you have the right to continue coverage for 18 months. That's under COBRA. Now, the interesting thing is if you're divorced, and in that case, the spouse who did not have the coverage, the dependent spouse, has a right to continue COBRA coverage for 36 months. The problem is that very often that these plans, because you have to pay the cost, you're entitled to the coverage, but you have to pay the cost. And very often, the COBRA plans are much more expensive than going out and finding someone to get a private plan. But this has now become really critical because of the changes in insurance. I mean, I don't even know how the insurance agents are keeping up with all of these changes. But again, since Bob mentioned Carol Johnson, I've also said that she's a really great resource. And so that's one thing to think about if you're thinking about retirement, because even though you don't take Social Security, you're going to have to pay for medical coverage one way or the other. And of course, what happens with many people is they end up paying between the taxes they pay on their Social Security and their medical benefits and the fact that they get a reduction if, depending on what they're earning. I don't recall what the earnings are now, but there's a limit that you can earn without having to do drop down from Social Security. In other words, your security will be, Social Security benefits will be less. It used to be a dollar for every $2, and as I said, I don't recall how much the income was. There is some amount of income you can earn, but it's frankly, I know, as I recall, it was something less than $15,000 a year. That may have changed.
It's more than that now.
But
it's 16 or 17.
16 or 17. Bob thinks it's 16 or 17. The point of this is most of us don't keep up. And even with my clients, when we're faced with these issues, I find that we have to find out every single time because these things change, and none of us can truly keep up with all of the changes that are made. So the next thing I wanted to talk about today, and I am going to have a couple guests on in a few weeks, are franchises. Bob, have you ever thought of going into a franchise business?
I did. About 12 years ago, I went and looked into starting another business venture concurrently with my landscape business. And I went down to Maryland, and the name of the company was the Cleaning Authority. They did house cleaning, and they had this business model that I just didn't agree with. I've always worked for myself. I've never had partners. And I just didn't like some of the ideas that they had. So I decided I wouldn't get involved in a franchise. For some people, it's good, but I always felt energetic enough and entrepreneurial enough
right.
to be able to just do things on my own.
Well, and certainly I'm going to have an attorney on and at least one person, I think, who is in a franchise business in this county. Because it is something that you really have to do your due diligence. And what you just told me is that's what you did. You really looked into it, and for whatever reason, it wasn't a good fit for you. And, of course, certain franchises, wish I would have gotten into McDonald's, but it would have been 40 years ago. And I certainly, in the past, was involved in a case where someone had a number of Burger King franchises and had done very well. But it depends on what's going to be provided. Certainly, one advantage can be name recognition. Now, I'm not so sure cleaning authority, I mean, that may be depending on what type of cleaning. I mean, if it was in big office buildings or whatever.
It's house cleaning. Mostly residential. They did all kinds of.
Yeah, but if it's mostly residential, is that really a good business to pay all of the franchise fees when, in fact, we know that there are so many self-employed or, you know, small mom-and-pop type operations? I'm not saying it's not, but all I'm saying is that you really need to, be very careful. And one of the things that we need to look at here is protecting New Jersey franchises under the New Jersey Franchise Practices Act. And, you know, this is important. We always think there's laws on everything, although I happened to see something recently that apparently dog groomers don't have to be licensed, and there have been some really serious situations where dogs have died or been injured. And I would have assumed that, you know, hairdressers have to be licensed. And so you would think that in New Jersey especially, dog groomers would have to be licensed. And, in fact, one of the situations occurred right here in Hunterdon County. And it was, you know, people who have pets, you know, really love their pets. And some of them probably love their pets more than their kids. believe it or not, as people know, I do divorce work, and there are custody cases where, you know, it's animal or animals that have been involved. And, you know, it's really important to the individuals, and I've had cases where we work out shared custody. And, in fact, some of them have been, the agreements are more specific than whatever shared custody they have for the kids. And I'm laughing a little bit, but it's really not funny for people who are truly enamored and love their pets. And, you know, that's one of the toughest things sometimes between custody and parenting time of children and custody and parenting time of pets. The courts will help with the custody and parenting time of children. I've not found a judge yet who is going to take seriously litigation over pets. So that's something that we try to mediate. We try to work out with each other. And in fact, one case, actually, we were able to settle all of the issues except for the pets. And we agreed that the parties would, if they didn't settle it by themselves within a few weeks, that they would go to arbitration, and that the arbitrator would really, you know, call the issue. And there was a reason for that case for it to be as seriously contended. The contentions were really tough in that case. But in any event, that was the only way we could work it out. So what about the New Jersey franchisees and how they are protected under the Franchise Practice Act? Well, first of all, the act was enacted to remedy the disparity in bargaining power between franchisors and franchisees. And that is significant. I mean, it's kind of like you go and get a mortgage and you sign 26 pages of a document that, you know, nobody reads, even attorneys don't read. But this act, I'm not saying that you should not read the franchise documents. Frankly, I don't understand why anyone would enter into a franchise without getting legal advice from an attorney who really deals with this. And again, if somebody came to me, you know, I would have no better idea than anyone else. But there is an attorney, and I hope to have him on soon, here in Hunterdon County, by the name of Kevin Kilcommons. I have referred cases like this to him because they're not you know, this is not something, in my view, you dabble. But those of you who listen to me know that I really think that attorneys need to be specialized in the area. There are a few very good general practitioners around, but at this point, very few. Because if you have an immigration question, you really need to go to an immigration lawyer. If you have something in the area of franchises, you really need to go to somebody who's done this before. It's like bankruptcy. Most attorneys don't handle bankruptcy, and we would be out of our element if we tried to handle bankruptcy cases, unless we went back and did some and received a lot more training. So what's the definition of a franchise? Well, under federal law, a franchise is defined as a continuing commercial relationship that requires the following three elements. The first is identification or association with the franchisor's trademark. So that's important because one of the things you're doing is you hope to have the advantage of the franchisor's trademark. And, of course, that means that the franchisor has to have a good reputation. You know, and I'm not sure exactly how you check that out, but I think it's important because if suddenly there's a lot of black marks against the franchisor, that's going to reflect on your business as a franchisee. So then two is the exercise or right to exercise significant control over or the provision of significant assistance to the franchisee's method of business operation. And that's what Bob just mentioned. He said that when he looked into the cleaning authority, he didn't like the business model. So that's really important to make sure that you agree with the business model. And I'm not going to put you on the spot to say what you didn't agree with, but what would you suggest people really look for?
Well, you have to look to see if you're going to be comfortable following the rules of the franchise. You know, they're successful. The two fellows that owned it were very successful. I can't say anything disparaging about the franchise itself. I just didn't agree with the business model. I would be uncomfortable with the protocol that they had. I just have my own ideas about doing things, and I just didn't agree with some of their ideas. So it's nothing wrong with their business, it's just how I am. A franchise can be perfect for somebody else. I'm just not one that likes to conform to those kind of rules.
Well, and very often, real entrepreneurs, you know, they're either successful or not successful, but they do want to rely upon, you know, their own ideas in order to make a business successful. Now, the third thing, of course, is a required payment of at least $570. I thought that was a very minimal payment, made at any time before or within 6 months after the franchisee commences business. So that, that obviously is very minimal, and I'm sure that most franchises are, you know, many thousands of dollars. And what are you aware of what the franchisor does to vet the franchisee? In your case, what were they going to do to look in to see that you were a good fit? Was the only thing they were interested in that you could pay the money?
No. We didn't get to that point. I'm sure they would want responsible people owning their franchises. They're not going to want someone that's lazy or late, or they would want to qualify me too.
Right. Well, and as I said, while the definition is the definition I just gave you is instructive, it only serves as a foundation, and it's really not directly applicable to the New Jersey franchisee raising the New Jersey Franchise Protection Act as a claim or defense. So what I guess I should talk a little bit about the conduct that's prohibited under the New Jersey Franchise Practices Act. It's not protective, it's Practices Act. And what it does in New Jersey, it reflects the legislative concern over long-standing abuses in the franchisee relationship. And that could be or is very likely caused by the power disparity between franchisors and franchisees. And that is, the reason that, there's a lot of consumer protection, and this is a protection for somebody who wants to get a franchise in New Jersey. So the Practices Act, for example, prohibits a franchisor from terminating, canceling, or failing to renew a franchise without written notice explaining good cause for the threatened action, and that has to be done 60 days in advance. Well, you can imagine that someone who's invested a lot of money, maybe even in a brick and mortars business, in some ways, I mean, how could they ever get back on their feet, even with 60 days of notice? But in this case, in New Jersey, good cause is limited to the failure by the franchisee to substantially comply with the requirements imposed upon him or her by the franchise. In other words, there are requirements that must be met under the terms of the franchise, and the franchisor can't just decide they want someone else unless the franchisee has not complied. So it's a violation of the New Jersey Franchise Practices Act to terminate a franchise for any reason other than the franchisee's substantial breach. So New Jersey really tries to protect a franchisee unless they're really in substantial breach of their contract. So, if they try to terminate for any reason other than the franchisee's substantial breach, even if the franchisor acts in good faith and for a bona fide reason, they're going to violate that act. So if the notice requirement must set forth all the reasons for termination of franchise and must be sent to the franchisee at least 60 days in advance of termination. And I think what New Jersey does, because of this protection, franchisors should be willing to work a little bit harder with their franchisees if they feel that there's any breach. And, of course, what we need to realize is that, you know, the franchisor makes money. The more successful a franchisee is, the more money that the franchisor earns, because there's usually some percentage of either gross sales or profits, or the franchisee has to buy supplies from the franchisor at a certain price. So, for example, in the cleaning franchise, would you have had to purchase supplies?
Yeah, everything would come from them.
Okay. And I assume that part of the contract, however, would be something to limit their...
No, it's not you.
The limit... keep talking, because I'm just getting a call. Nothing works well. Sorry about that. Now you know why it's Hunterdon County Chamber Radio and we're all volunteers, because I forgot to turn off my cell phone. Certainly wasn't expecting to get a call. So what, in your case, would you have had to buy from the franchise?
You had to buy all their cleaning supplies, whether it was the chemicals or the equipment, and utilize them.
So that, let's assume, in your case, there was something else that you found that you liked better. I think what you're saying is you could not have used it even though you thought it was a better product.
Exactly.
Okay. And that, of course, is pretty significant, because most business owners want to be able to, in fact, use the best products, or perhaps find an easier way to do something. And so I don't know if you would have had any negotiating power at all And probably not.
I didn't get to that point, but I wouldn't think so, because if that got around, everybody would want to do the same thing. That's part of their business model.
Right, and that's also part of the way that they make money. And again, that would be why they'd want you to be successful, because the more successful you are, the more product that you're going to buy from them.
Correct.
Although, as I said, unless, and interesting, I wonder in that case, if a franchisee just went out and bought all kinds of other product and was using all kinds of other product, if in fact that would have been a substantial reason and a substantial breach. And in fact, that might have been.
It would have been a breach. But you couldn't get away with that, because they know how much material you're going to use for so many units that you clean. So okay. It's the same thing in a pizzeria.
I was just going to bring that up.
You buy dough and it makes so many pizzas, strombolis, calzones.
The interesting thing, in fact, I was going to bring that up because, you know, obviously if it's not a franchise, but in litigation cases, matrimonial cases, because there may be some what we would call underreporting of income, one of the things that attorneys do is get the records of, you know, how much flour and how, you know, certain other ingredients are purchased by the pizzeria in order to figure out what their actual income is, because I guess I can say that other than me, I have clients whose income seems to go up during the divorce process, but most people are trying to not have their best year while a divorce is going on because of equitable distribution of the value of the business. In any event, we'll be back in a couple more minutes. I just want to play some more of our sponsors, breaks from our sponsors, and we'll be back to talk a little bit more about franchises.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Thank you. The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Okay, we'll be back for just a couple more minutes, and I'm talking about the New Jersey, at this point I'm talking about the New Jersey Franchise Practices Act. What you can do, and I suggest you do, if you're at all interested in this law, and you should be if you're considering a franchise, but you can get information on https://www.franchise.org/sites/DEFAULT/files/capital-F-franchise_business_outlook_january2017.pdf. This is information that would be really helpful. And of course, then there is the Franchise Act itself that people should look at. And as I said, I really suggest before you invest the time and the money to talk to an attorney who specializes in this area, because they can certainly read things in the franchise agreement that you don't understand. And frankly, I might not completely understand it either. So what you need to know, and what is important, of course, is to know exactly what you're in for before you make a final decision. And let me ask one other thing, maybe a couple things. Do you think it's important for somebody going into a franchise business to know about the business? For example, you were going to go into a cleaning business. I know that there's a franchise recently opened, a soup business, very, you know, great. I know that particular franchisee didn't know anything about the business and wanted to really, you know, start over in something new. But I wondered how important it would be, and I'm hoping to have him on, how important it would be that he had some restaurant experience. And, you know, I guess he'll answer that question.
I think a cleaning business would be easier to adapt to than a restaurant business if you've never had experience cleaning or you never had experience in a restaurant. Restaurant businesses are tough. Long hours, you have to make sure you stay on top of all of the regulations, you know, the cleaning, safety factors.
Yeah, health, food.
Yeah.
And, of course,
much more complex.
I've represented restaurant owners, not franchise, but restaurant owners. And, frankly, very few people that I know work as long, the long hours, and really incredibly long hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, 16, 18, 20-hour days are really not, at least the high-end restaurant owners that I represented, that was pretty regular. I mean, it was hard to believe that they, you know, didn't get burned out. And, of course, that's a different issue. But what people in New Jersey have to look at is, you know, most restaurants aren't that busy during the week when, you know, everybody's out on the weekend and right. You have to wait, et cetera. I was in Key West, and I thought, boy, that's a whole different milieu, because any restaurant that's any good is always going to be busy because it's tourists, it's a tourist area. So, you know, tourists have to eat every night, not just when they're going out on the weekends. And so it was very interesting to to see the difference. Now, interestingly, even as busy as the restaurants were in Key West, the better restaurants took reservations. And I know that many restaurants here in New Jersey in this area don't. And so there are some of us that don't go out on weekends. That has nothing to do with, you know, franchises. But I think you're right. You know, and everybody wants to get into a franchise when it's first starting because the cost is going to be significantly less.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't, you know, you're also taking more risk.
Right. That is, you're not sure it's going to survive.
Right. I mean, back when we were...